Parenting Makeover with your IY Generation Young Adult Parenting. Now, by the way, when I was parenting young adult children, it was how many years ago? Can you guess? It was more than 20 years ago. You can imagine how old I am. I am not up to date. I'm very out of date. If you have young adult children, you are more up to date with them. So why do you ask an old guy teach you an updated technique? However, I'm not here to teach you. In fact, I'm here to learn with you. When I was given this topic by Alice, I have to humbly admit, what does IY, what does it mean? So I went to Google. It came up with all kinds of crazy acronym for IY. None of that has to do with young adult. So I imagine it must represent internet youth or internet young people. And I checked with her. Oh, she said, yes, right. And then she introduced me to a website, Tim L. Moore. So I went there and browsed around. Oh, it makes sense. Lots of good stuff there. So with her help, I started to learn something about IY. So I'm sharing with you something I just learned. So if you change your mind, you don't want to sit here and listen, be my guest. Anyway, I'm here to share with you some of those struggles I went through and some of the insight I learned from some of the parents of young adults who came to see me because of their struggle so badly they were referred to me because they suffer from some mental symptoms, depression, and so on and so forth. I start to realize parenting can be very tough, can be very painful, can be very hurting. But on the other hand, I have also encountered some parents. They are hilarious. They are liberated when their children moving towards university, they've grown up, they come out to work. They find it so rewarding. So it's a two-edged sword. It can hurt you, it can kill you, but it can also reward you. But I think no matter it is rewarding, whether it is hurting, it is the most meaningful task in our life. In a minute, I will try to demonstrate to you. Parenting, especially parenting adult, is a very worthwhile task. Now, your subject is parenting makeover. The first thing that I think of, is it possible to teach an old dog new skill? Can you change someone who is already in their 40, 50, parenting a 20-year-old guy? Can you change them? Is makeover in terms of parenting, is it possible? By that time, what can you learn? What can you change? You are already in your middle age. I think it is both yes and no. Why? It is yes, you can make over your parenting skill because you are not finished yet. Don't you think that you are 45 years old, you cannot change? Actually, you are still changing. Are you not changing? You are getting slower. Your vision is getting blurrier. But on the other hand, you're more careful. You are more able to assess a situation from all aspects. Therefore, you have more worries. You're changing. But your worry indicate your maturity, not necessarily something bad. We are always changing. We are not finished. No one is finished. Also, you still can modify. Actually, we are making all kinds of modification. In the past, I wear very hard shoes. But now, if I have to stand here, I have to have very soft shoes. so that I can stand here for more than an hour. This mortification. I'm still the deteriorating old man. But how can I cope? By making modifications to my shoes. We are making modifications. We are sleeping in a different kind of mattress now, if you are 50. The modification can allow us to cope better. Modification is possible. And also, the most important point is, parenting is not a static thing. Parenting is dynamic. It's a lifelong process. It's the maturing process of a relationship, our relationship with our growing up children. Therefore, parenting makeover is possible. On the other hand, it is not possible. Why? I'm talking from both corners of my mouth. You're finished. You can never be young again. If you say, for example, you miss an opportunity when you were younger, you have more energy, or you have more time to play vigorous game with your young kid. You cannot do that. You cannot go out and play soccer with your son anymore. He will outbid you. If you miss those precious moments, you cannot make it over. Time's gone, it's gone. Opportunity, some opportunity can never return. Even, particularly in certain situations, there's really no hope. What happened? If you have a young adult son who was killed in a car accident, you have no more son to parent. So it is impossible. Once the opportunity is gone, you cannot recapture. So it's not possible to relive your past in order to make your parenting better. You accept what you lost is forever, but doesn't mean that you cannot modify, regain, or catch up. Number two, certain change is not possible. For example, our basic nature cannot change. Once you reach adulthood, many of the things are fairly set by nature. We can only do modification. We cannot do very radical change. Our temperament is inborn. An introvert will remain an introvert. You cannot change an introvert into an extrovert. This is not possible. We should accept rather than change. Radical change may not be possible, but doesn't mean change is not possible. Do we need radical change in order to make life better? Do we? Who said that we must have radical change in everything? Try to change everything radical. You cannot live. Imagine if everything at your home is radically changed. What is life for you? But you can modify, right? The last point, it is not possible, which is really a goodness of fit. If you have a very rigid personality, and your child is also very rigid, you are done. Forcing Zhuang Dei Kao. However, if you are very flexible, your son is very rigid, there's still hope. Or the other way around, you are very rigid, but your son is flexible, your daughter is flexible, there's some hope. However, if two individuals, adults, they are rigid, game's over. So these are the qualifications of my topic. Yes and no. Now let's visit the very basic question first before we talk about parenting adult children. What is parenting itself? What is this task? Now, psychologists, after ages of study, Jean Piaget, Eric Erickson, those great psychologists in the past, they study about already laid the foundation of what parenting is. It is a developmental task. What is a developmental task? In each life stage, we are all confronted with certain problems. And certain problems is more unique in one stage than other stage. For example, early infancy, toddler. The task is to learn how to control your locomotion. you have to learn how to crawl and then walk. When you're adolescent, you have other tasks. You have to learn how to accept your changing body image. You have to learn how to cope with your increasing sexual drive. Different tasks confront you. When you're an adult, you have to consider how to live independently. When you are an adult parent, you have to learn how to talk to your grown-up children as an individual adult. So there is a task confronting us, and it is unique for each stage. And because of that, we have to develop new skill to master the task, a mastery. We have to learn. A little boy, little girl, have to learn the control of the leg, how to walk and without falling. Develop the mastery of locomotion. For adolescent, they have to develop what? What is the major task for adolescent? You're already a parenting adult, so your children has gone through adolescent. What is the task for an adolescent? What is the task of adolescent? Be comfortable with rapid changes. Hormonally, socially, and also to pretend to be an adult, right? And then after you develop that mastery, you resolve the challenge of that stage, and then you move on to a new stage. Now, not only parenting is a developmental task, it is a dynamic developmental task. Because parenting basically is a relationship, as I mentioned earlier. It's the relationship between two individuals, parent and child. But when we talk about that, it is really the two generations, relationship between two generations. And it is a task that has to be redefined all the time. Now, for example, during infancy, what is that relationship? It is a provider and a receiver. By the time we get really old and our children are middle age, what is that relationship like? It is also provider and receiver, but the reverse, right? You have to redefine that. Sounds exactly the same, provider, receiver, but it's reverse. So during the whole life process, our interaction with our children is defining and redefining the relationship. And in that process, there are interaction between the two, and it's very affected by the two individuals' own personal growth. I will elaborate that later. And thirdly, it is stage-specific. That means in early childhood, the relationship, the role is like this. By middle and late childhood, it's different. Adolescence is different. And by adulthood, it's very much more different. Now, I believe you guys have read many writings, books, or listened to tapes on parenting. Isn't it true? There are lots of talk on early childhood parenting, beginning with Dr. Spock's book, ages ago. What about parenting adolescent? Lots, right? Have you read a lot on adult parenting? Not too much. There's a book here, Praying for Your Adult Children. Not that many. But tonight, I'm going not to talk about parenting in general. We'll focus on the last part. But it has to be a stage specific. Have you seen some people at the age of 60, they speak like an adolescent? 又嗲又潮氣有冇見過? On the other hand, you also will see some parent behaving very inappropriate with their children. And is from the web you showed me. I read of a news from Tim Elmore. There was a parent of a teenager. The mother pretend to be her daughter, put on the makeup, put on her daughter's dress, and went to write an exam on behalf of her teenage daughter because she's going to fail. So she put on all the makeup and pretend to be very young, you know. And, but she was discovered. It is a real story. Both were expelled and even charged. What's the problem here? Is the mother wrong to salvage the daughter from writing the exam, knowing that she doesn't know how to write and she can pass herself? She wanted to rescue her. Now, it would be very appropriate if that teenage girl is a two-year-old kid who doesn't know how to swim, falling into the water, she'd jump in and rescue. That would be very appropriate. Risk everything. But for writing an exam for a teenager because she did not study, she did not know her stuff, and the mother pretend to write the exam for her, that's way too much. You may think it is ridiculous, but there are such people who are ridiculous. This is totally age inappropriate, not to say morally not correct, right? It has to be age specific, stage specific. Okay, now what then does parenting young adult involve? It is not rocket science. This is common sense. I think what I put up here, you all know. Common sense. It involves your maturity and your children's maturity. And it also depends, because it's a developmental task, it also depends on the successful developmental task in previous stages. Now, what does that mean? If we do not successfully complete a stage, and then we move on to a stage, it will be very difficult. Now, for example, for a teenage, your children arrive at adolescent, during the childhood, they have to learn how to write, how to study, how to discipline, how to have an industrious life, industry, so that they can do well in school, so that they can be at least at par with their colleagues, with their friends, with their peers, so that they can develop a healthy self-esteem. Now, if at this stage of early childhood they do not have a basic, healthy, normal self-esteem because they are having certain good performance, good schoolwork, when they become an adolescent, they will feel very awkward. Because one of the tasks I just mentioned is to develop self-esteem. By the time of teenage, you have all kinds of awkwardness of your movement. Your body is changing. You feel awkward. And that will affect your self-esteem. But if you successfully complete your developmental task as a child, by the time you face the challenge in adolescence, you are much better off. Now, for parents too, if during the earlier days we have a good way of parenting, by the time we reach adulthood, our children reach adulthood, the task won't be so difficult. So it depends on the previous stage. Then you may ask, if I did not do a good job, then by that time, am I finished? Well, it is not the fourth point. It is an ongoing effort to grow onto further maturity. It's okay if you were not doing well in the previous stage, you still can catch up. You still can spend an effort. Why? Because we are now living much longer. We, on the average, have lengthened our lifespan by 30 to 40%. When our children, the IY generation, they reach 20, in fact, they are still in comparatively young time, young age. I think we should redefine adolescence. We should redefine adulthood by adding a factor of 30% to 40%. If you are now 60, you are not an old man. You are only middle age. But 20 years ago, you are almost senior. But now you are still senior. You get some. You go to some places, 60, you can get a discount. But anyway, I think 20, if you were born in 1990, you are 21. By the age of consent, you are adult. But emotional maturity, social maturity, financial maturity is a late teen. So with this additional age, actually we were given more redeeming time. We still can catch up. We still have more time to develop our parental skill and our parental and child, parent and child relationship. So it's an ongoing effort to grow. Remember this. It's a dynamic. It's not static. Make over. So parenting, can we really make over? Or is it really a continue to grow thing? I also already mentioned parenting actually is a relationship. It's a relational development between two individuals, but by now with our IY generation, the 20-something guys, you are 40-something or 50-something, it is the relation between two adults. Okay? So parents continue to grow through the task of growing old. Now once we pass 20, physically we are all growing old. We spend only 20% of our life growing up. And our adult child already grown up, okay? So, but we are starting growing old. And with better food, better sciences, we may lengthen that youthfulness. And many people who are now 40 and look like 20. And some of the ladies here, you are 50, look like 30. Because of better health care, better nutrition. So we have to look at that as two people meeting the challenge of life in growing up or growing old. One is growing old, the other is growing up. And redefining the parent-child relationship that's age-appropriate. And let's move on. Now, parental development task. For parents who have young adults, we have three challenges. The first is resolving our personal ambivalence. The second is we have to understand their culture. And last, it is a learning and adjusting process to a new scenario. Now, let me spend some time talking about resolving personal ambivalence. Now, what is ambivalence? Ambivalence represents conflict or opposite emotions, love and hate, joy and sorrow, intimate and distance. These are all ambivalent stuff. The two sides of the same coin sometimes. So in resolving personal ambivalence, I'm talking about the parent. As our child grow up, we also sense certain ambivalence within us. For example, the joy of seeing our children growing up, getting more and more independent, and also moving up, moving out, or climbing on the education ladder, or if they are working, climbing on the professional ladder. We enjoy with them. We are glad, oh, they are growing up. But in this joy, there's always a sense of sorrow, isn't it? Unless you are not a thinking parent. I think it's normal, and actually it is normal to have ambivalence. If you say, oh, I don't have ambivalence, I would believe you. You don't have ambivalence because you don't allow yourself to experience it. Some people, they can only tolerate certain emotions, so they suppress the other. But it is quite healthy to experience the internal kind of tug of war. It's not necessarily a major, huge conflict, but there's a tension. An emotional tension. That sense of sorrow is to see that my child is more independent of me. My child is more prone to speak up for himself or herself. A little kid, they don't talk back like that. But even if they talk back, you don't take it that seriously, right? But if your adult child talk back to you, how will you feel? You feel terrible. You feel being insulted. But then, can you shout, yell, or even slap him like a little kid? Your police will be at your door. You can't, every now and then, here and there, or if he or she comes late, after 1 a.m., some parent would not want to go to bed. Even the child is 30, I have heard about parents. I cannot close my eye until I see that their car is in the driveway. And I ask them, what for? I don't know. I just cannot sleep until I see them. You know that they are adult, they're moving away, but yet you have this craving, longing, you know, to be the parent of that little young kid, your baby boy, your baby girl. So there's the joy and the sorrow, the pain and the happiness, all mixed up there. And especially now you're launching them, sending them to university. You know, they are going away. Separation. It leads to the second point, physical and emotional separation. Now, are physical separation and emotional separation quite similar or not similar? Which is more difficult to deal with? Physical separation, out of sight, out of mind, or emotional separation, out of sight, but never out of mind. So this is ambivalence. And actually, once your child starts to walk, separation begins. By the time they get married, they should disappear. But do they ever disappear from your mind? No. And also there's the issue of dependence and independence. Honestly ask yourself, oh, my son is so good. He's now moved out, he has his own condo, now he has his own car. He's totally independent. I'm so happy. Are you really so happy? Oh, many of you shake your head. Hallelujah. Honest. No, you like to feel that you are needed and depended on. Now, this is our emotional ambivalence. We have this kind of internal tug. Actually, let me ask you. I want my child to still depend on me, so I feel being wanted. Who is more independent? Who is more dependent here? As long as I need my child to make me happy, I'm totally dependent on my child for emotional fuel. As a parent, from day one, we should understand this principle. We are there for the child. The child is not there for me. Really. We cannot use our child to be our emotional pillar. Some parents, they did such a great job in nurturing their children to the extent that when their child leaves home, they die. Emotionally dead. No more emotional energy. No more emotional fuel. Dependence and independence actually is not so clear cut. When you think deeply, you will understand it's a mixture. There's something there. It's not about the child, it's about you. The same with control and let go. They are now leaving home, going to university. You find that her room is empty now. How many of you would expect them to call you every day? Maybe they don't call you every day, maybe once a week. But I have heard parents calling them every day. We rejoice with them growing up, going to university, but they cannot let go. Now, I'm not saying what's right or wrong. I want you to be aware all this discussion is to understand parent has a conflict to deal with. This is our developmental task. Handle your own conflict, your emotional conflict. How do you handle joy and sorrow? How do you enjoy? How do you handle intimacy and separation? How do you handle dependence and independence? How do you handle your own need to control and the reality to let go? Now, these are all ambivalent tasks. Has to be resolved. Resolve does not mean disappear. Resolve means you come to grip with reality and accept it and adapt to it. And life move on. That's resolving. The problem remains forever. And then we have to understand, develop more understanding of the IY generation. Now, understanding is so important. All relationships are built on proper understanding of one another. And when one feels being understood, more than half of the work is done. If your child feels that you understand them, your parenting job is half done. It doesn't need so much extra work. All they need is, my mother, my father understand me. Now, before we talk further about understanding the culture of the IY generation, I'd like to mention just a few generational labels. Builders. The generation builder. Those who were born before World War II. My parents, they are the builders. I'm the boomers after World War II. And then those born after 1974, 75, the Generation X, my son, my daughter are Generation X. And then the one after Buster, Echo, IYZ, all kinds of label, and then call them touch screen. I think my grandson should belong to that. My grandson who is four, who already play with my wife's iPhone touchscreen and faster than I. And then the more recent, and because of some of the problem with this young generation, they call them generation limbo, they cannot find a job, they don't want to move out, or the lost generation. I think, now, I'd like to comment on those labels. Labels are only good if we understand that we call this generation so such and such, but don't use it as a stigma, 标签. It's very bad. Sometimes I think those sociologists or whoever who coined those terms, they are doing more harm than help. When you label something, you stereotype them. Don't stereotype our children. Treat them as uniquely individual. The more we respect them as a unique individual, the better. Don't label them. Don't blanket them. Each individual is different. I still find young generation, they behave like boomer, and boomer behave like lost generation. So you cannot generalize. But it's good. Why? Identify some commonality to help us to bridge them, to understand their peers or the general trend. That's fine. But don't use it as a stereotype. There are some generality among this the IY, those born after 1990. Of course, they are frequent flyers of the internet. Many of them, you know, browse the internet, linger on the internet for hours and play video games. But actually, it's not fair. I find many, many those called those old people called prime timer. They played video game just like a kid. And I hate to see those, you know, gray-haired people using phone doing all this. For hours. And actually, I do have some friends do that. But for the IY, they do spend quite a bit on video game. But this is not fair. I think many X-Gen, they do. They're still doing that, big time. And my son always told me, when he came back from England, he asked his friend, or visited their friend, some kind of gathering. He was so ticked off. How come they are now almost 40? They when we meet, they got nothing to talk, and each one tell their video game and play for a couple hours. That's sad. And many of them do not move out. They stay home. You know, it's too houses are too expensive. Or they just want to stay home. And sometimes they are very disconnected in a personal sense. They are actually not disconnected. I don't think it is fair. They're social media. They are in connection. I will comment on that in a minute. And then some people think that they are more narcissistic. Narcissistic means the love of self. Actually, narcissism, we should understand it in its proper sense. Narcissism is not necessarily negative. To label someone narcissistic sometimes very negative in connotation. That's why I don't like labeling. Narcissistic actually is understood by psychoanalysts as one of the major reasons we can survive. In fact, self-love is important for survival. Narcissism is related to self-love. It's not the same as love of the self. Okay? Self-love is preservation. You need to care for yourself. You need to give yourself proper place. That kind of narcissism is healthy. There are two kinds of narcissism. One is healthy, taking care of yourself. Abnormal narcissism is you only organize the whole world around yourself. You are in the center of the universe. Little child are narcissistic in that sense, egocentric. Everything's around me. But by the time you're 20 or 40, you still operate in that mentality. This is not healthy. Generally speaking, it seems that they are more narcissistic because why? Why? Why the IY generation seems to more talk about themselves than others, more have interest in themselves? Why? Thanks to internet. When I was a family physician, those 20 years old guy come to see me, they listen 100%. Now I'm a very, I won't call seasoned, but I'm an experienced physician and also a specialist. A 19-year-old guy can challenge me when I discuss about you have this condition, you need that medication. You know what he said? Oh, this medication has those side effects. This diagnosis has other differential diagnosis. Where did you learn about this? Internet. They are more protective of themselves because it gave them a lot of info about self. But they don't digest it, the problem is. So they have, and also they are more narcissistic because the world is getting smaller. No, because of the internet, it is like a global village. Things very distant to us, for them is not so distant. The perception of reality is different. You know, in a minute we'll talk about that, perception of reality. And for this generation, they are more pragmatic. They would value what they believe in. Suppose in our generation, people looking for a job or looking for a position, they would talk about terms, they would talk about compensation a lot. But I do find that younger generation, when they are searching for something to engage, they will ask, does it matter? Does it make a difference? What does it mean? They are more looking into the immediate consequence, immediate result. Some of our colleagues' children, they have a good degree, they have a good job, they would give it up, and then go to Africa just to be engaged in a world of flesh. Have you heard about that? To live among the poorest in Cruz Bay, Sierra Leone, just to live among the poor in order to understand poverty, what it is. You know, someone from a middle-class suburban Vancouver would go for that, you know. They value what they believe in. It's not so different from us. Our generally, we talk about security, we talk about return, you know, all this stuff. They talk about value, what they value most. And then they would like to work with people they enjoy rather than to work with the job they enjoy. It's not only the task, it's the calling. So this is very opposite to disconnection. But there's no conflict. Disconnect in a real sense because they spend too much time in the cyberspace, not in the human space. Both are reality though. The cyberspace is virtual reality, but virtual reality is not false. Some of our misunderstanding of virtual reality is to regard it as false. It's not false. It's part of reality. There's such as cyber reality. But they do not have the human reality there, the physical, the immediate contact there, the immediate interaction. And people, but they enjoy people. They do want to have good companionship, not only a good position. But because of the internet, they are trained more in the eye gate. Right from early infancy, they are exposed to all kinds of visual stimulation. More colorful, more dynamic, you know, all this animation. Now, you know what? All this stimulation, it modifies our brain development. So by the time you are 20, your brain is different from someone who is 40 years from you because of all this visual stimulation. They look for visual results. Something has to be tangible, visible. Because of this internet, this electronic cyberspace, they have a new way to assess and appreciate reality. They look at social reality different from us. They look at speed different from us. Because of the visual gateway. Cyber reality, it is true reality, but I would not call it pseudo reality. Cyber reality is semi reality, half of the truth. Half of the truth is fine if you know it is half. The danger of half truth is you take it as the whole truth. So as their parent, don't dispute about what they learn from the internet. Try to just provide them with the other half, the human half. They are fast and furious. They cannot tolerate slowness. That's why sometimes they cannot tolerate bureaucracy. But the older generation are more bureaucratic. And there's the crash in the family, the crash in the church, the crash in organization because of bureaucracy. So they have a different way to understand reality in terms of speed, in terms of the tangibility, and in terms of partiality. That's what this generation in. So we have, because of their exposure, because of the background, they have certain needs they may not even know. So as their parent, we need to capture on meeting their needs. They may know or they may not be aware. Generally speaking, there are six areas of needs. Connection, real connection. Social media is great to connect, but it's still in the very impersonal way, in a way. There's high tech, but low touch, so-called. So they want true human connection. Let them experience to have a breakfast with you. It's so much different from doing the Facebook. Let them sit down with you. Let you put your arm around their shoulder. Let them feel the touch there. It's so different from the cyber contact. And also, they have lots of information. They have lots of data. But they may not know how all this data relate, what the meaning behind all those data. You have 20 more than 20 years life experience. You know, you understand reality better. You have more perspective. Build on their data. Give them a different perspective. Give them the other side of the perspective. This is your parenting task. You are not there to debate or argue. You should do this or do that. You should say, may I suggest this? Can we look at this like that? Give them the meaning. Why all these kids, including those grown up, like video game? It's entertaining. Now, when you attack something on the game, there's no real pain. And when you gamble videoly, you just play those games, just score mark, there's no true loss. But it gives you an ego sensation. Oh, I scored 5,000 mark. I hit all the target. They love this entertaining. Their brain receptors are so much easily gratified immediately through the screen. Immediate gratification. Quick, everything quick and furious, quick and intense. But they don't quite understand what is lasting joy. They have immediate pressure. As parents, we should help them to see with all this how much you are equipped to handle the toughness in life. We should help to equip them. Playing all this video game is good for kill time. But you kill all your time, you can never be equipped to write your exam. So we have to encourage about equipment. Provide them with the basics. Provide them with the deficient. And then, when you discuss with them, you have to know that the information are so much there, so a lot. They are conditioned to look at description of a state of fact. They don't want prescription. They don't want formulation. You know, there's no such thing as the formulation of parenting. 教子方程式, there's a program called that years ago. Is it still on? Actually, there's no such thing as 教子方程式. There's no formula. My formula will be different from yours. There's no prescription, like doctors. We write prescription and prescribe. Take it. 3 times a day, 7 days, you'll be fine. Parenting is not like that. There's no prescription. I'm not giving you any prescription here. I'm only giving you suggestion. I'm only describing to you the process, the interaction, the needs, and how to go around it or go about it. To be descriptive, when we want to develop some guidance for our children, don't make it like a formula. I told you, I tell you, I give you a 3 point to remember. They couldn't even remember 1 point. Talk to them about story. Share with them some of your own story. That will go a long way. Describe it. Describe your own emotional struggle to your adult children. Don't be shy. Describe to your children how you make up with your wife after a silly fight. Describe it. It seems that you are telling them your failure, but actually you're sharing life experience adult to an adult. And don't tell them just all the facts or answer. Or make some question, inquiry. Let's learn together. Let's ask about it. Let's go onto the internet. You find it out for me even. And then discuss what you find. Last but not the least is balance. What is balance? Now here I would like to borrow a Bible imagery. In Psalm 127. Sons are a heritage from the Lord, children a reward from Him, like arrow in the hand of a warrior. An arrow, what is it like? An arrow has to be polished. No one will shoot a blunt arrow. An arrow can only fly straight if it is well balanced. If you have the feather on one side heavier, it cannot fly properly. If you have all the best arrow in your quiver, even you are the best archer, but you don't release it, it's still no use, right? And once you put the arrow on the bow or on whatever you want to shoot, you have to point in the right direction. It's no good pointing at your face and release it. I think this imagery is very rich. Now, in older day, when the psalmist wrote that, children are described as arrow, there's an interpretation like this. Let's go back to that. Children are gift from God. It's not that you gain it or you earn it. It's a gift. It's the good intention of the Lord to give you children. Especially in those days, when parents are working on the field or on the farm, many of them are shepherds, many of them are herdsmen. They use arrow to protect themselves from robbery or from a wild beast. The more children you have to help, the better. And as you get older and older, you know, your eyesight are not good, you cannot shoot arrow, they can shoot for you. So children are like, somewhat like the arrow that protect you. They are useful to you. The application for those days could be like this. But in nowadays, the application can be different. How could that be different? In terms of application, I think children are still a gift for God, from God. It's not that we deserve, but it is a gift to us, to bless us. However, we have to know how to value them, how to treasure them, and how to keep them well. How to make good use of them, in a way. Not to utilize them, but make good use of them. How to equip them so that they can be useful. If you want your adult children to be useful, I hope you can take home this imagery. They have to be polished, like an arrow. A blunt arrow is useless. How many of us always want to plan for our children so that they can have a good life? How many of us want to bail them out when trouble comes? Especially in North America, all the middle-class parents, they sweat for their children, give them the best stuff. We don't want to see them into rough time or hard time. Just like the story I just told you, the mother would not suffer to see her daughter fail in exam and wrote, pretend to be her to write the exam. Bail her out. And I've seen so many parents trying to bail their children out. Even they have a little offense, they immediately jump to post a bill, a bail, bail them out. They are spared from tough time. They are not polished. I still remember when my daughter was in her late adolescence, graduating from high school, and she wanted to go to Peru to be a short-term missionary to the rural Peru. Wow. It was scary in the summer. She went. Upon arrival, she called the next day while I was having dinner in my brother-in-law's home. And she called and we put her on the speakerphone. Dad, I have fever, diarrhea. I want to come home. Wow. My brother-in-law, oh, just fire her back, fire her back. I was shocked. So I asked her a few screening questions. Well, I and my wife just kind of quiet for a while. Well, it took you such an effort to go there. You have such a high longing to try out. If you really cannot tolerate, you cannot stand it, of course we will get you home. And then she changed her mind. Okay, I will see how I feel tomorrow. And then she stayed for the whole summer. She come back much tougher. If I would not let her be polished and bail her out, send her a ticket, I think she would blame me for life. Balanced. The arrow has to be balanced. Now, in terms of balance, there are many things we have to help them to see the two sides of the story. And here are a few things I want to share with you about balance. Memory is not the best, so I've written down a few points here about balance. Now, you know the generation that grew up, especially in Western education, they emphasize a lot on assertiveness. Speak up for yourself. But the traditional Chinese value is gentleness and meekness. And the same with our scripture. Balance. Here calls for balance. Being assertive and being meek are not in conflict. This is a big area we can help them to integrate assertiveness with meekness. What about our education system emphasize a lot on build up a strong self-esteem? Have you seen a textbook or a psychologist talk about other esteem? I've never read one article on other esteem, always self-esteem, self-esteem. Far less talk about God esteem. This is balance. And then cyberspace versus human space, true human state, true human's personal space with contact, human contact, real human contact, person-to-person contact, not image-to-image contact. The cyberspace are all imagery, images. This is part of the reality, but we have to help them to be balanced. Now, I have no time to elaborate about how we can help them to be balanced, but these are the areas we have to work. This is a task. I don't have the answer. You may not have the answer. Get the answer with your children. Work with them. Release. The arrow has to release. I think when your children are now going to university, this is the first step of releasing them. By the time they graduate, they work, release them. Don't ask them to come home. Kick them out. There are too many people who want to come home. It's not for mortgage. You have enough money to pay for their mortgage. Some of you. I don't think it's very healthy for those kids to stay home that long. But we don't want them to go out. We don't want them to have rough time. Allow them to be polished. Now, polishing is an ongoing polish. It's an ongoing process. The more you polish, the sharper they become. Release them. Let them go free. I still remember during my daughter's wedding, I gave a short speech. And then I said, Cindy, go. You know what the feedback I got from her piece? Oh, Uncle Choi, Uncle Thomas, that is the greatest thing I ever heard. I told my mom to say the same thing to me. Let them go. Go free. And then fly them in the right direction. Now, this direction is not by prescription. It's by influence. By showing them the real principle in life. We can only shape the direction, but we cannot control them. But if we guide them properly, they won't go far away. How? Well, we have to learn to live and adjust to this new scenario. I mentioned again and again, it's an adult-to-adult process, an adult-to-adult relationship. Let them have full autonomy. Let them make their own decision. Even a wrong decision, allow them to make it. They have to learn through the hard way. Let them learn it through the hard way, or else they never learn. Have you seen a child who can walk without falling? If you would not allow your child as a toddler to fall, maybe your child is now in wheelchair for life. But we do not allow them to have full autonomy in making decisions. I really risk that to a great deal. Even allow them to date non-Christian, not to overrule them. But thank God, I was trembling inside. I don't encourage that. But they learned their lesson. They all marry Christians at the end. But that's a challenge. Allow them to have full autonomy. Have respectful conversation. Don't fight, don't argue, don't yell, don't scream, don't call names. Don't label them. You IY generation. Last but not the least, teach them by modeling. Now, what does it mean by modeling? Many of us, we think that if I am a success story, if I have lots of achievement, I'm a good model. Really? The majority of us may not have a lot of achievement. The majority of us may not have a lot of success. We may even have more failure than success. How can I be a good model? Yes, you can. Many times, I just told those broken parents, they are so upset because they see their child in trouble and then they regret, I did not bring him up properly. If I would have known like this, he has become a drug addict, I would not treat him like that. I would be doing all over again differently. And now I'm so depressed. I'm so broken. They are so depressed that they even attempted suicide to that extent. What hope do I have? The best thing I can discuss with them is, it's not the end, you're not finished. You still can be a good model. If your son sees you now so depressed, even attempted suicide, and you resolve that, you restart your life again, you come alive again, you move on with your life, wow, how inspiring. If you have many failures, thank God for that. Deal with your failure. Come out from your failure. You can be a very inspiring model. If you are an addict, cyber addict, if you are a pornography addict, deal with it. Share with your son. You can be a very inspiring model. If you are a gambler, if you are an alcoholic, reform yourself. You can inspire them big time. Never use our success story to inspire our children. You can share with them in the proper way, but some of the parents are very narcissistic, very... Look at your dad. Look at all the degree I have. Look at all the education. Look at my income, 7-digit. Look at my stock. Look at my house. Look at my manner. My goodness. Oh, look at my position. I'm the chair of the deacon board. Shame on me. No good. Don't parade our success. Parade our achievement. Show them how to integrate meekness with assertiveness. Show them how to integrate failure with success. Show them how to integrate sorrow with joy. Show them how to let go and yet remain supportive and not in control. Big time. Life modeling. Avoid pitfalls. Oh, this, I think I can just quickly go over it. None of you will fall into it. Never spy on your kid. Never open their email and never try to steal their password. And never pretend to be an expert. And oh no, okay? We cannot be an expert in everything. They can check you out easily. The internet is there. And don't give advice if they don't ask you. Because unsolicited advice is intrusive. You know, most of the IY generation will feel very resentful, especially those who were brought up here, is parental intrusiveness. We don't respect privacy. We don't give respect to personal space. That's a big offense to them. And last but not the least, as I mentioned, I have seen too many adults, old adults, addicted to the internet. We are the slave of the cyberspace ourselves. Deal with that if you are. Is that the last one? And it is never too late for improvement. If we don't think that we did a good job in the past, okay. It's not the end of the world. You still have, if you are only 45, you still at least have 50 more years to go. Never too late for improvement. Any improvement counts. It's like snowballing. And God, our God, if you're a Christian, our God is a God of second chance. When he sent Jonah to Nineveh, this prodigal prophet rebelled. I don't want to go. And then the Bible said, the word of God came to Jonah the second time. Second chance. And you all know of the parable of the prodigal son. You know, Jesus Christ's most famous story. The prodigal son, you know, spent all the money of the father's, spent all his inheritance, and then went broke, and then go to feed pigs. You know, you imagine a Jew feeding pig and nothing to eat and want to eat the curd of the pig. But then he returned. And the father embraced him and restored him to full glory. And then he said, this is really our Heavenly Father. He's doing that to all of us. God of the second chance. If you think that you are a failure, no, don't worry. You have your second chance. If your son fails you, your daughter fails you, give them a second chance. Second chance is not really so tight-fisted, so miserly, one and two. That means endless. Second is endless. And also, now I'd like to share with you some idea here about the three level of truths, which is very relevant to dealing with our IY generation, especially so much information on the internet. In fact, there are three level of truth. Our IY generation are exposed to mostly the first level. It's called information. Those raw data. They post everything on the internet. A lot of information. They may not even know how to digest. But this is not knowledge. Knowledge has to be learned, to be taught even. Knowledge is to put all this information and data into perspective and into relationship. How this part relate to the other part. And how this part is related to the whole. And what sense are all this information and data give? How you can make sense out of this whole bunch of data or info. But the third level is the most important, which is what the parent need to grow so that it can pass on to our children. There's wisdom. Wisdom is to apply those knowledge for decision making. Now, decision making is not necessarily always what to choose. It is as important what not to choose, what to do and what not to do. And it's not only by our head understanding the whole issue, it's to invest your emotion into those issues. When you embrace something dearly, you need to show your emotion that is truly dear to you. You have the passion for it. And then how to live it out in your life. In fact, wisdom is how to live life. How to live life in its fullest sense. How to put all our past information gathered throughout the last 40, 50 years, how to make sense out of it, and how to use it to make wise choice. As we do that in our own life, this will be learned, watched, observed, adopted by our children. It's much louder than our own word. The older, the wiser. Actually, there's a new branch of psychiatry now evolving called positive psychiatry. What does that mean? Positive psychiatry is the study of wisdom. We are starting to find out that, in fact, the older you are, you can be the wiser. Not necessarily the older you are, the more likely you are to be demented or have Alzheimer. Having Alzheimer is an illness. The normal life is the older you are, the wiser. Why? Our brain actually has a lot of potential untapped, unused. And there is also a certain area, there's certain neurobiological basis for wisdom, but it comes with life experience. and the training of your brain. But how do we train your brain? You teach your brain how to think, how to function. A brain is not a brain until you teach it. So adult parents of adult children, use your brain. But your brain is also the site of emotion. So our head is not only the head. Our emotion is there. But also we need to make choices, commit ourselves, throw ourselves into it. The longest parenting stage is parenting adult children. You are a parent of a child only for 5 years or 10 years. For teenagers, only maybe 6 years. Parenting adult, my God, 50 and above years. It is the longest process. It's a long growing process. It's a process to gather your wisdom, to grow your wisdom, to enrich your life. It's bright, sharp, and encouraging. It's a good challenge. Even you have the toughest child, adult child. Take it on. Take it on. Take it up. Grow your wisdom and come back and share with one another. And I think it will be like a banquet. Thank you.